There's a certain message that pervades our culture, our world, it's all around us, that celebrates the person who can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps and make something of themselves despite their difficult circumstances. So a month or two ago, Grand Rapids played host to the Broadway musical Hamilton. Right, and Hamilton follows the story of this immigrant who comes from absolutely nowhere and rises to become one of the founding fathers of our nation, somebody who is driven so strongly by this desire to make a name for himself, to not throw away his shot, and he is relentlessly, recklessly pursuing that idea of creating a name for himself. It drives him to risk absolutely everything. See, we like pursuing things. We like pursuing things because when we are pursuing things, it puts the burden on us and it makes it so that what matters is whether or not we can succeed in doing what we set out to do. Our culture thrives on the gospel message of Disney World that says that you can believe in your dreams and you can make them happen. If you just believe in yourself enough. And so we relentlessly, recklessly pursue that which we hold in front of us. And so maybe we pursue a name for ourselves like Alexander Hamilton. We pursue leaving some sort of legacy, some sort of reputation that other people will look at us and tell a story of us that we were a good person, that we changed the world, that we accomplished things. Or maybe we relentlessly pursue material things, that we would have enough money to comfortably retire, or even more than that. We like pursuit. And for many of us, that pursuit even becomes something more noble, right? Something more beautiful as we relentlessly pursue a deeper relationship with God. As we relentlessly pursue being a better person. That we want to be the best that we can be. We want to be some sort of super Christian, perhaps. But over the course of the next several weeks, what I'm going to suggest to us is that if we want to achieve true transformation, if we really want to experience the depths of a relationship with God, if we want to experience who we were created to be, that instead of us doing the active pursuing, that we need to recognize that God is pursuing us. That at the heart of who we were created to be, at the heart of true joy, at the heart of true satisfaction, at the heart of truly enjoying life, is not our active pursuit, but God's pursuit of us. We're going to begin this morning with a story that Jesus tells. Jesus tells us this story in Luke chapter 15. It's a short one. It's a parable, but it's a story of somebody losing a sheep. In Luke chapter 15, verses 4 through 6, Jesus tells this story. He says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. Now, Jesus tells this story because he has been gathered together, verses 1 and 2 tells, he's been gathering with what are known as the tax collectors and sinners, right? These are the outcasts of society. These are the people who don't follow the rules. These are the people who good, upright, religious, moral people want absolutely nothing to do with. But Jesus is with them. They gather around Jesus. Everywhere Jesus goes, the people who have been told by the religious elite that they don't belong, they're the ones who follow Jesus. The people who don't have their lives together, they're the ones who come and gather around Jesus to hear what he has to say. And the Pharisees and teachers of the law, the religious leaders, the elders of the church, they're the ones who look at Jesus and criticize him. They muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." And it's in light of that that Jesus tells three stories that we call the lost sheep, the lost coin, the lost son, right? The first one, the one that we just heard, a man has 100 sheep, one of them wanders away, he goes and finds it. A lost coin, a woman has 10 coins, she loses one, she turns her house upside down in order to find that one lost coin. The lost son, a man has a son, and that son basically comes to his dad and says, "I wish you were dead, I want my inheritance." He takes his money, he goes, he spends it all, and then he goes home, and his dad welcomes him home. Three stories in a row, all about lost things. Except they're not really stories about lost things. Because while we might often think of them as the stories of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost or prodigal son, I think we could better call this series of three stories the reckless shepherd, the frantic woman, and the wasteful father. Because the center figure in each of these stories is not the sheep that gets lost. It's the shepherd who leaves 99 sheep in the open country to go find the one. The center of the story, the lost coin, is not the one coin that's hiding out somewhere in her house. It's the woman who overturns her house completely and absolutely in order to find the one coin. The center figure, the story of the prodigal lost son, is not actually the son himself, but it's the father who first gives him what he asks for, and then when an inevitably, that son wastes it away. That father does what no man in his culture would have done. He runs out to meet his son and embrace him and call him his own again, and even throws him a party. Three stories in a row in which the central figure does that which would be deemed irresponsible, that which would be seen as something so extravagant and lavish, so even wasteful, in pursuit of that which they have lost. So Jesus begins the story. He says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? In Greek, there's a way to frame a question that assumes that the answer is yes. And that's what Jesus does here, right? He words this question in such a way that the person who's listening to it is automatically supposed to answer, yes, well, of course. Of course he leaves 99 sheep in the open country and goes after the one lost sheep until he finds it. Except they wouldn't. If you have 100 sheep and you lose one sheep out of these 100 sheep, a good shepherd would not leave 99 sheep in the open country exposed, at risk, in order to go and pursue that one lost sheep. If you have 100 sheep, a certain amount of loss was inevitable from a business perspective. Sheep wander off. Predators come. Some sheep are not going to make it. But the shepherd in Jesus' story, he leaves 99 sheep in the open country to go pursue the one. This causes us a little bit of anxiety, right? There have been scholars who have looked at this passage, looked at this story, and they say, well, he's not just leaving them alone. He must be entrusting the help of other shepherds in order to watch over these 99 sheep while he goes and looks for the one. I've even preached that sermon before. But I don't think that's the point. When I keep looking and reflecting on this passage, when I wrestle with it, that's not what Jesus says. He doesn't say anything about this shepherd entrusting the other 99 sheep to other shepherds while he's away. No, he leaves them behind to pursue the one. On first glance, it seems careless, irresponsible, reckless even. But here's the thing. The point isn't the 99. The point is the one. We're going to hold on to that because we're going to come back to why that one matters so much, because it matters so much more than we think. But as we look at this story, Jesus is telling a story about the shepherd who is relentlessly focused on the one. The shepherd who even recklessly is focused on the one. The word reckless means at its heart, acting in a way that is regardless of the consequences. And what we find when we experience the love of the shepherd for us is that that shepherd was so bent on showing us his love, his pursuit, that he acted without regard for the consequences, even though it would cost him his own life. The shepherd in this story would be a shock to the audience to whom Jesus is speaking. The people listening to Jesus tell this story, they would have been up in arms at the thought of equating God to a shepherd who would act in such a way. He leaves the 99 in the open country and goes after the one lost sheep until he finds it. And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Now, if you spend enough time in Christian circles, if you walk into a Christian bookstore, you may very well encounter a picture that looks something like this, of a happy shepherd with a little lamb on his shoulders and other sheep happily around him. Except, it doesn't say that it's a little lamb that wanders off. The shepherd has a flock of 100 sheep. One of them wanders off, and the shepherd goes and chases it down and throws it on his shoulders. It's bent and burdened, weighed down by the sheep that he carries home. That sheep might even be more upset to be thrown over the shepherd's shoulder. And if I'm that shepherd dragging a kicking and bleeding and fighting sheep back into the fold, I really have to be dedicated. I really have to care. I really have to be bent on pursuing that one lost sheep. But this is what Jesus does. In order to pursue his lost sheep, the Gospels tell us that it will end with Jesus carrying a cross on his shoulders. That it will end with Jesus shouldering the burden of our sin. Even as the crowds call for his death, call for his crucifixion, like a kicking and bleeding sheep refusing to be saved, and brought back into the fold. The crowds will call for Jesus' death even as he carries our sin on his shoulders. There's a movement in our world today that says that one of the central things that we need to do is that we need to be mindful of how we spend our mental energy. We only have so much care that we can show, and so we should conserve it for those things that we can actually make a difference with. There's a subtle art to knowing when to care and when not to care. You see, for Jesus to pour himself out, to carry a cross, to throw that kicking, bleeding sheep over his shoulders and bring it back to the fold, to carry the cross on his shoulders, to shoulder the weight of our sin, even as the crowds are rejecting him, even as the crowds are calling for his death. Well, that's just irresponsible. Reckless, even. And yet, God so relentlessly pursues us. That he will carry the cross, he will carry our sin, so that we might have life. He calls his friends and neighbors and he says, "Rejoice with me, I've found my lost sheep." And at this point, if you are somebody who has spent enough time in the church or among other people who call themselves Christians, you might very well think to yourself, well, the call on me is to be one of those people who rejoices when somebody comes to faith. I'm already one of the 99. My job is to be glad when somebody comes to faith. That's what Jesus is telling me. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they didn't realize that Jesus was pursuing the one when he was eating and gathering with the tax collectors and the sinners. And so Jesus was reminding them, hey, it's your job to be glad that these tax collectors and sinners are coming to faith. Jesus ends it by saying, I tell you that in the same way there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And we think, oh, that's right. That's a reminder for me as somebody who I've spent a lot of time as a follower of Jesus, and so I need to focus on being glad and hopeful for those who don't yet know the love of Jesus Christ. Yeah, sure. But there's a big assumption that we make. There's a big mental move that we make when we hear this parable, if we hear this story talking to us in that way. And that is that we assume that we're one of the 99. What Jesus says, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And friends, I got to tell you, I will be the first to tell you, I am not one of the 99. I'm the one. Whether this is your first time walking into a church building in your life, whether you have never really thought about who Jesus is and what he means to you, or whether you have been following Jesus your whole life, friends, I have news for you. We are all the one. All of us, like sheep, have gone astray. All of us, left to our own devices, we're not going to choose the life that God has for us. See, when we start thinking about sheep, have you ever been out in sheep country where they drive the sheep down the road? I don't think I have ever met a more stubborn animal than a flock of sheep who refuse to get out of the way of anything, no matter how large, that's barreling down the road toward them. I can't think of anything more stubborn than a sheep, except maybe me, when I think I know what's best, when I think I've got it figured out. Sheep can get themselves stuck in some rather ridiculous ways. And I might think that that sheep looks rather ludicrous with a bucket on its head, until I realize how ready I am to shut my eyes to the things that I've done wrong. How quick I am to point out how somebody else can make themselves better without realizing what I've done wrong. Sheep can even be quite mean. And as much as the life as a follower of Jesus Christ should be one that is transformed by love, I know that sometimes I would rather just drop my head and charge full bore at a situation. Sometimes I know that what I'm about to say is born out of spite or anger or hurt. Sometimes I'll act first, trying to defend myself rather than fighting for the person I love. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. I'm not one of the 99. I'm the one. You see, I think the hand-wringing about the shepherd leaving 99 sheep in the open country isn't the point. Because the point of the story is the shepherd who will drop everything to pursue the one who has left and wandered. And the fact of the matter is that I am never, ever, ever done being pursued by God. Friends, the reality is when I look at my own life, my own story, my own journey as a follower of Jesus, I spent an awful lot of that journey thinking that first and foremost it was about meeting certain obligations and arriving at a certain point. And once I had met those obligations and I had arrived at that point, I was good. And then from there on out, the rest of it was about my hard work and my effort. I grew up with parents who were believers who brought us to church once or twice every Sunday. I grew up being inundated with the story of grace. And yet it took me years, years of my life to realize that God's pursuit of me didn't depend at all on me meeting certain qualifications. Friends, there is not one moment of any day, of any week, of any time when God is not relentlessly pursuing you with his love. This moment right now, at 10:35 a.m. on Sunday, March 1, is yet another moment when God is reaching out to you and saying, it is not about you and what you have done to earn or deserve it. I am pursuing you with my love. Do you feel it? It's now 10:36 and God is saying the same thing to you. I am relentlessly pursuing you with my love. Do you feel it? At 10:40, God's still going to be saying, I am relentlessly pursuing you with my love. Do you feel it? At 10:45, God is still going to be saying, I am relentlessly pursuing you with my love. Do you feel it? And even though time and time and time and time again, I am going to be a sheep who gets my head stuck in a bucket, or I refuse to get out of the way of the car barreling down the road, or I choose to headbutt somebody I care about instead of being loving and kind to them, even though time and time and time again, I am going to go my own way, that God is never going to stop pursuing me, that God is never going to stop pouring his love out on me, no matter how many times I reject it, no matter how many times I choose my own way, no matter how many times I am the one sheep, God is always pursuing me, regardless of the cost. From our perspective, from our economics, from the way that we operate in this world, that sort of lavish love is irresponsible. That sort of lavish outpouring of love is reckless, even. And yet there is not one moment of one day when God is not pursuing us with his relentless love. Far too often, I think I need to do something to be worthy of that love. A box I need to check. A list of rules I need to follow. Accomplishments I need to have behind my name in order to make God love me more. But friends, this week I want us to be reminded that God's pursuit of us is not tied to what we can do or what we can achieve. On your way out of church, there's a chalkboard. And there's chalk down on the tray. And the words, I am pursued. And at some point this morning, I just want to invite you, grab a piece of chalk and wonder, what barriers have I put up to God's pursuit of me? What do I think needs to be done before God can pursue me? And by next Sunday, they'll be gone. Because those walls, those barriers, they will not stand to God's love. Friends, God so relentlessly pursues us, recklessly even, that on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he gathered with his disciples, and he gave thanks, and he took bread, and he broke it. And he gave it to his disciples and he said, this is my body which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And in the same way, after supper, he took the cup of blessing, and he blessed it. And he said, this cup is the new covenant of my blood. Do this as often as you drink of it in remembrance of me.